From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on May 14th in Toronto, Canada. Grateful Dead guitarist Bob Weir was a guest at the Einstein Gala, where he was both performing and speaking about the importance of innovation. And Weir saw a connection between the arts and science. Weir said that STEM education should become STEAM education. STEM, of course, stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Well, Bob Weir said that creativity should be considered an important part of STEM fields, and the risk is that STEM is becoming too rote. Soccer fans, think of it this way. Why does Europe and South America tend to whoop the USA in international soccer? Because Americans are taught very technical skills, but they lack the creativity and flair that is fostered in foreign nations. By sticking to the mechanics almost exclusively, American soccer players have never produced any player capable of reaching the heights of Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. Greatness requires technical prowess combined with creative flair. Is that the case in STEM fields? Well, there's a debate going on, and we're going to touch on that this hour with our guests. Let me welcome them, and this is an interesting partnership to tell you about. It starts with Dr. Hitomi Makaibo, who's an assistant professor of chemical engineering at the University of Rochester. Dr. Makaibo, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Katie Malley's here, art teacher at Brighton High School. Katie, welcome to you.
Thank you, Evan.
Laura Arnold is here, a physics teacher at Brighton High School. Welcome, Laura.
Good afternoon.
And Ben McLaughlin's here, a 2014 Brighton High School graduate, currently a sophomore at SUNY Binghamton. Ben, welcome to you.
Thank you.
What are you studying at Binghamton?
I'm double majoring in graphic design and environmental science.
Okay. Very interesting. And I was asking Ben before the hour if you've always considered yourself a scientifically minded person, and you said?
Yes.
And then I said, have you always considered yourself an artistically minded person? And you said?
Yes as well.
Okay, see, this is interesting. A lot of people, the answer is, well, yes to one, no to the other. And that's unfortunate, I think. And we're going to kind of talk about that. But Ben, does it make sense to tie those, the idea of art and science together, or for in your life, is they have they largely been separate?
I think it makes a lot of sense to combine the two. They have a lot to offer each other in terms of the different skills they build up onto each other that the other may be lacking. Like in terms of theater and performing arts, those build up important public speaking skills that could be applied to giving presentations on research or connecting with your lab mates. And the sciences can build critical thinking skills that can be applied then to creating art.
Had you thought about it in those terms until recently?
Not really.
These benefits are probably just happening in your life, and you're not really maybe internalizing what's going on here. But the bottom line is you're seeing the benefit.
Definitely.
Of crossing this. Well, Dr. Makaibo, tell us about this partnership. What is going on here between U of R and Brighton, and take us through the genesis of that.
Okay. So what's happening here right now, what I'm doing is I'm trying to kind of expose students at very young age to what we do at the university in a very high level, very leading edge. But I just want them to kind of feel very comfortable with it, and I want to be able to show that it's nothing very foreign, but it's actually very related to their daily lives. So basically, I just want to kind of maybe lessen the barrier between students who really don't know what university people are doing to what's actually being done real life, and how it's actually nothing foreign, but it's very related to their work, and I just want to connect them. And this platform that we're trying to build up right now is to kind of expose the student to that kind of opportunity.
Okay, and so how are you doing that?
Oh, okay. So basically what I do is I work with Laura and Katie, and basically what I actually do is I come up with this research project that is this leading edge research project, and I kind of just do a presentation to the students about how this research is really exciting and how it's related. And then the student would then also listen to Katie's presentation, which talks about how you can actually connect disciplines of your own and bring it to an art project. And then the students are then challenged to come up with their own project using the topic that I presented, using the tools that Katie provided that expresses this topic in their own way.
Hitomi, do you think students, even at the high school level, generally see art and science as very different and generally not very much married?
Yes. I think they don't really connect very well. And just like Ben was saying, though, to be a good scientist, you need really artistic skills. You have to demonstrate and show people what you're doing and present an official presentation or even writing research manuscripts. You need to give artwork that properly depicts what you're doing, that is accessible and understandable to people who's not doing what you're doing.
This has echoes of recent conversations about the value of the humanities, even if you're not going to have a career in the humanities. You know,
right.
To some degree, the humanities gets kind of pushed aside as less necessary, less valuable. Every few years, we see an article pronouncing the death of the humanities, and it turns out they're never quite dead. They're more like the guy in Monty Python and the Holy Grail who says he's not dead yet. And that's the humanities. And I'm kind of seeing art and the value in similar ways, that even if Ben doesn't have a career in art, he's already seeing the value in different ways as it impacts his work in scientific fields, scientific research. But I grew up, and I wonder if our listeners feel the same. I'd love to hear from you, listeners, about this. I grew up being essentially told, you're going to be good at English sort of language, or you'll be good at science and math, and probably not both, and it's good to figure it out early, and just try to get by in the other one, you know, the one that you're not good at. And I went through college never wanting to go into Clippinger Hall, you know, where all the science work was going on. I avoided it entirely because I was told early on, that's just not your thing. I regret that now. And I wonder if that is changing. But listeners, I want to know what your experience is with that. 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Katie Malley is an art teacher at Brighton High School.
Mm-hmm.
You must have been, you know, an art student, an artistically minded student growing up.
Yes.
What did you think of science growing up?
I liked science in a couple of the courses that I took, but for the most part, it was the same thing. I really had to kind of make my decision between the English language and the arts versus math and science early on. And I see that with a lot of our students now. We do have some that overlap, like Ben did, and take a lot of both classes. But in a large way, there's a lot of separation. And I don't think it's just with the humanities and science and math. I think a lot of the subjects are really segmented, and most teachers kind of stay in their room and do their own thing. And it's really difficult to get out and collaborate with others. But we've gained such a great understanding and bond from this. So I hope we do it again.
And I'm not saying, by the way, that students don't have strengths and weaknesses. Clearly we do. And I was just like any other student. It's just that the message was, you know, almost exclusionary to what I'm not naturally good at, as opposed to, hey, you may not be naturally acclimated to a certain field, but there's so much to gain there, and you know, there's so much sort of good to sow out of that. So what do you view as your role in this partnership here, Katie?
Well, when I think of STEM and adding the arts to it, I really hope that students can take away some of the skills, even if they're not planning on becoming an artist at the end of the day. There's a lot of confidence building that can come from getting your ideas out there, brainstorming, getting comfortable with getting out of your comfort zone and taking risks. And those are pieces that I really wanted to see some of our students in the science class really explore and play with. My role, I oversaw the mentors that came in. So I had some art students from my own classes who came in and kind of just helped out some of the science kids that maybe weren't as familiar with art techniques or maybe wanted a sounding board to, you know, bounce ideas off of. So I overseed them. I also helped with kind of giving the students an idea of how can I translate these complex scientific ideas into works of art. So we looked at a lot of contemporary examples. We read artist statements just to give them a little more background.
How did that turn out?
That was actually one of my favorite parts, getting to show them the contemporary examples. We worked on classifying those. So we looked at three different basic categories. We called it inspired design, which is basically looking at beauty in art or you know, how to visually represent science. We looked at making a statement, so how you can take that science to a whole new level and say something to your viewers. And then we looked at connecting in personal ways, so how can they internalize it and see how the art impacts their own life. And so we looked at the different examples from contemporary artists, and the students kind of shared where they thought they fit. And I think that gave them a good background to understand how they could take the science we taught them and turn it into their own pieces of work.
Do they generally, before this approach, were they thinking about science in these kind of aesthetic terms? You know, it's really interesting to think about science and that the beauty, the design aspects, those kind of things. Were they thinking in that way, you think?
No, and I'm not sure we were really either. I feel like it was kind of a new way to kind of connect these together. So we were almost learning alongside the students, and that was really powerful for me because, you know, I don't use a lot of science when I'm thinking of my own artwork. So this made me step outside of my comfort zone as well.
I want to get back to Hitomi, who's smiling and wants to jump in. Go ahead.
I just learned so much from Katie's presentation. She just brought me a very different way to understand how art is depicted and how it could be more effective. It was just such an eye-opening presentation.
Well, thank you.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Kind of.
Well, so, I don't remember the details, so maybe Katie can help me here. But she gave us like three different bullet points of how you can connect. So first you need to kind of think, this is my understanding, and I might be totally wrong, but first you want to think about what you want to show in this presentation. Do you want to show how you connect with the topic, or is there a specific idea that you want to present in the topic? So she was telling us that art is not just a picture, but there's some kind of artist's own meaning to this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Just this way of thinking and how then, so you, now first you identify what is the purpose of this art, and then she gives you some different ways to how you can express that art in an artistic way. She showed us different ways to draw art. She showed us different projects that can be made of art. She showed us different forms of art. All of these were something that's very, very different from what I... So for me, I was told, like, art is not your thing. So I did not get any of these artistic training. So this was just very, very different and just something that I would love to use in my own presentation in the future.
You were told art is not your thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Look, art is definitely not my thing. I mean, I can, really objectively, I can't draw at all. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't have liked to learn more techniques.
Absolutely.
As opposed to just giving up on it, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, all the know-hows that people have built up in this artistic field is something that we can definitely get benefits out of. So it was a little bit... too bad that I didn't have that training of how to think artistically and how to present artistically.
Well, and before I jump to your phone calls, and Kelly and some others, the phone's ringing. We're going to get to listener comments in just a second. Let me bring in Laura Arnold, who's a physics teacher at Brighton High School for, you know, the science perspective. We're compartmentalizing everything, you know, so. But when you grew up, did you have that same kind of experience or not?
I was told that science was my thing, I guess. I wasn't really told things weren't my thing.
Okay.
And I think I just want to push against this idea of a thing that a person might be good or bad at, because exploring all these different ideas are new learning experiences. So I don't think anyone has a thing. And especially if you have never tried it before, like maybe you never even took an art class, you might not feel... like that's your thing, but you've never tried it. So trying these new things was a really great experience for us. And it was new for Katie and I as teachers to co-teach science and art together.
So what was your approach to co-teaching, adding that artistic component, working with Katie on that?
Yeah, so we collaborated a lot. So we met, we did some online collaboration as well, because I was a little concerned with, you know, how do I grade this? Like, how do you grade art? I have no experience with that. But I found a lot of connections, and I feel like we've said connections a lot today on this show.
Well,
connections.
It's in the back of your brain. Yeah.
But especially, she came to the table with this really interesting brainstorming idea called divergent and convergent brainstorming. And this was a phrase that I had heard when I was thinking about engineering. And I'd gone to some sessions at a conference on teaching engineering in the sciences. And the divergent brainstorming is coming up with multiple ideas that could solve a problem for engineering, but it would be multiple ways that you could express the same idea in art. And then the convergent brainstorming was deciding, okay, what is the best solution to solve this problem, or what is the best way that we could represent this concept in art? And that is, I didn't expect that blatant connection between art and science, mm-hmm. But the creative aspects that go into, especially engineering, and the innovation that happens in art are integrally related.
Well, let me grab a couple of phone calls, yeah. And we'll continue to mine this territory with our guests here. But I'm going to start with Kelly in Rochester first up. Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, first of all, I'm thrilled that you've got some of our Brighton teachers online, because our kids will be enjoying some artistically diverse science classes in the future. So thanks, guys. But I wanted to say that, you know, as an artist, arts, you know, they aren't just for translating obscure scientific discovery, but they're a reason to discover. You know, as an artist, I find myself doing way more math than I ever expected I would ever do. And we do a lot of technologically based exploration in order to make, you know, kind of what's going on in our heads. So I'm thrilled if this is a way to get more arts into the classroom, because I think it creates more thoughtful population. So I guess this is all a good thing. I'm all for STEAM.
Yay. Yay. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. Thanks for the phone call. Anything else to add there? Well, let me ask the art teacher. She's saying if this is a good way to get even more art into the classroom at a time where, let's face it, art is, it's not everywhere being reduced, but it certainly is happening in school classrooms or school settings across the country. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about the idea of other teachers incorporating parts of art into their own classes. I mean, that doesn't mean every project has to be a painting or something that's completely artistic, but just using some of those brainstorming techniques, you know, getting the kids to take risks, step outside of their comfort zone, these are all wonderful things that are going to better prepare them for their futures. And then, you know, my own interest being an artist, I love being able to speak through my work, and I love to see kids find that same voice. So,
all right, let me grab another phone call. This is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hi. I'd like to just talk about Audubon and then the birds that he drew. I mean, that was a major part of his science that he did. And even Richard Feynman, the physicist, later on, really learned how to paint as a an expression of things that he wanted to do, and it really was kind of like therapy for him. Mm-hmm. And all the way up to XKCD, who kind of that joint science and art thing that we're talking about.
So in other words, John, this is, maybe it's not emphasized enough, but certainly there are many famous names that have been in the science field who have always obviously appreciated art and its possible impact. Is that part of the point?
Right, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's to these three instances, it's almost integral to their own work. So
it's a good reminder, and thanks for the phone call, John. Boy, the phones are blowing up. People are really engaged on this subject.
Awesome.
And I also just got an email from Blue Cease, who is the executive director of ROCO, the Rochester Contemporary Art Center in Rochester, and he sends along, this is a little lengthy, but I'd like to read it, because Blue sends along the recent comments in January by Ford Foundation President Darren Walker, when he was addressing the annual meeting of the Association of Art Museum Directors in Mexico City. And here is what Darren Walker said then. Quote, the most fundamental cause of today's crisis in the arts is connected with a deeper transformation underway in our society. During these last few decades, we have raised market-oriented thinking above all other kinds and categories of human understanding. Where once we treated different fields of knowledge and action with equal respect, we today subordinate everything under economics. In medicine, we talk about cost curves and insurance schemes with relatively scant attention to the care in healthcare. In the U.S., especially, we champion the so-called STEM disciplines in our schools because our politicians tell us STEM is where the jobs are. And this intellectual inequality, thinking economically rather than holistically, this perpetuates economic inequality and social inequality and political inequality. Indeed, all of the inequalities that jeopardize our society's wellness follow from this single manipulation, the idea that every element of our lives must be defined in relation to capital. No place is this distortion more palpable, problematic, and pernicious than in the arts. This kind of short-termism has infected so many dimensions of our lives, it has distorted the way our society makes decisions. End quote. Darren Walker from the Ford Foundation back in January. Now, there's a couple of things there. Katie Malley, hopefully the world still has jobs that are decent paying for artists.
Yes.
But what do you make of some of the comments he's making there about STEM and why STEM is more important than the arts, or the message, the way we send it?
I mean, I feel like we see some of that in schools, too. You know, I've seen some parents that really prefer to kind of push their students or their children down certain paths. And I can't say that's right or wrong for every individual, but I just see the arts as a way to express any subject. I mean, really, some of the examples that were listed before about artists that utilize those, I mean, any way that you create a piece of art, you're using math, you're using your language. You know, we had our students create artist statements that were really beautiful and touching that went with their pieces. And so it's really, they had to use math and some other techniques, more technology-based, to kind of put their pieces together. And there's just so many great skills that can come with it. A lot of people just are instantly turned off by art or say, you know, I'm not capable of doing this. This is not what I'm trained in. I'm really stink at drawing. But at the same time, there are so many other pieces of it that are really valuable for anyone moving forward. So, I mean, I'm very much on board with the arts.
Laura, what do you think of that, what I just read there?
Yeah, I think the arts provide skills that are marketable. So it's a little shocking to think about that. When I think of the skills that my students practiced and worked on in this project, they had collaboration skills, sending a message, taking an idea and following through to create something, creative thinking. All of those are skills that they will need in whatever field they're going to go in. If we want to be job focused and money focused, the arts provide a lot of skills that help people be successful in the global economy. And we call these in education 21st century skills a lot of times, the collaboration, creative thinking, and clearly communicating what you've learned to other people. So we're practicing that in art and in science.
Philip writes to us and says, after 41 years as a chemistry professor, I know without a doubt that creativity makes the difference between very good and great scientists. For example, I have known quite a few Nobel laureates, and they are uniformly creative at a high level. Yet I would resist calling creativity art. Also, there are many artists who have no interest in science. First of all, you have to care about science, so let's not dilute the idea of emphasizing science. Let's teach science in art classes. That's what Phil says. Here's an art teacher, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I actually encourage a lot of my students when we have projects, we start with things like big ideas, like fear or, you know, something that's going on in the world, crises, things like that. And so I encourage them to use what they're learning about in other classes to influence their art. I mean, art comes from when we put it inside of ourselves and we're thinking about our ideas, they come from the things that we're exposed to. So if I'm exposed to a lot of scientific things, I'm more likely to create art around those topics.
Sure, and to Philip's point, we have to know science. We have to care about science. I agree with that. That's one of the reasons I'm pointing out that I have a little bit of resentment about growing up being told, well, you know, you're not going to be good at science, or it's not going to be your thing. You don't have to emphasize it, as opposed to this is important, and let's find ways to get you creatively fired up about it. Sometimes I think that's good teaching. But sometimes I think that is just, as you said, kind of getting away from just compartmentalizing it and bringing these things together. But I take Philip's point. I mean, I agree that we have to teach science, and no one is saying not to, right?
Yeah, and I had in my class, so I teach a class called Principles of Physics, and every student at Brighton takes physics. So this is a class for students who historically haven't done so well at science. And I had students who were really interested in art. And I saw this opportunity through Dr. Maccaibo and felt like this would also fit in with my students and help them learn science, and because you have to a little bit, and also to be an informed citizen, knowing things about science and how science arrives at understandings is really important. The art piece was a really great connection for them, and students said they liked the freedom they were allowed, seeing an idea they created come to life with their partner.
So it sounds like part of your work is, you know, understanding not every student who comes into a physics class or a science class is going to want to be there or be thrilled about being there. And part of that is learning how to figure out different combinations to reach kids, which is just defining teaching in general, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. Knowing your students and knowing what will get them excited about what you're teaching.
Well, Dr. Maccaibo, go ahead.
So actually for me, this project was really about getting a lot of different people connect and learn and get excited by science. So this, to me, this theme is actually, the strong focus is on STEM. But how would you actually get people who's not really interested in STEM get excited about STEM. And I thought art was a great way to get all these people connected. And especially, I think it kind of goes on how you have different types of students. A lot of the students are visual learners or sensual learners. They learn by touching or seeing things. And that's a lot of different things. That's a hard topic to do in like a math class or even, I don't know, something that's very abstract. It's very hard to give a visual kind of way of teaching. And I thought this art is actually a different way to teach students what STEM is.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about STEM and STEAM. You've heard a lot about STEM in recent years, science, technology, engineering, and math. Adding the A is adding arts, and that's kind of at the heart of this partnership between the University of Rochester and Dr. Hitomi Makaibo and Brighton High School. Katie Malley's here, an art teacher there. Laura Arnold is a physics teacher there. Ben McLaughlin is a Brighton High School graduate. He's currently a sophomore at SUNY Binghamton. Our phones continue to buzz. Let's get our only short break of the hour, and we're going to come back to your phone calls. And yes, there have been some who've pushed back saying you should not put an A into STEM, mm-hmm. and we'll explore some of the complaints about that. So much more ahead this hour on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Coming up Monday on the next Connections, it's Memorial Day, and we honor the service of our veterans with a conversation about honor flight. The Buffalo chapter disbanded earlier this year, but the Rochester chapter of Honor Flight is going strong. They've already run two flights to Washington. We're going to talk about how they are helping veterans understand that the public cares and honors their missions and work. That's Monday. I love this email from a listener. Jean writes to us and says, with an email subject, by chance, and she says, referring to yesterday's program, she says, are any of your wonderful speakers today part of the millennial generation that was maligned by some people during yesterday's show? Wow, very impressive. Jean is really enjoying this conversation. We know there's at least one. We're not going to out the rest of the group here. You're a millennial, and you're getting a thumbs up from Jean over there, Ben. So
thank you.
Does millennial, does that sound like a pejorative to you? Do you avoid that term, or do you have any?
I don't really associate with myself too much.
All right, there you go. So, doesn't bother you. Well, Jean is saying that she's enjoying the conversation, and so am I. And if I'm not careful, I'm going to have no open phone lines. So let me grab one before we come back here. And this is Mike in Rochester. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Evan. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Okay, so I was in my car, and I missed a bit of the conversation, but I did want to comment on something that I think probably is one of the big social sins that many parents and even teachers commit when you're working with a student. And this happened to me as a child. I was creative, so I was put in a sort of category, and that often excluded science and math, and I was told that I was no good at that.
Right.
And I bought that story. And even my dad told me when I thought about going back to school for dentistry, he said, oh, you're not good at math, so you can't do that. And I bought that. It wasn't until my late 20s that I said, you know, I'm going back to be a doctor, and I've got to take some classes. And funny thing is, I did very well, particularly in a class like organic chemistry. Now, organic, unlike regular chemistry, has a sort of a creative bent to it. And I remember doing certain projects and the teacher going, wow, that's very interesting. You know, so there's a creativity. Besides, so I think it's really bad when we do regiment children and you know, put them in a label there where they're going to perform according to what you say rather than what they're capable of doing.
Well said, Mike. I just think it's thank you for the phone call, Mike. I just think it's a disservice, and you're hearing in Mike's story exactly why that is, that we run the risk of pushing kids away from something they may end up liking or being very good at, or even skills they should have, even if they don't initially embrace or love them. And by the way, O-Chem is not easy, right? I mean, I remember watching my wife study O-Chem in college going, I'm glad I'm not in science right now. That's a lot of work. Didn't study O-Chem? No?
O-Chem I did.
Yeah?
But I agree that it's actually very artistic.
Interesting.
You have to have a three-dimensional mind. You have to be able to picture a lot of things. It's almost like a picture kind of puzzle that a lot of artistic kind of intuition play a very, very good role in understanding that topic.
Very interesting. Ben, have you had to tackle O-Chem?
I have, and it does lend itself very well to visual learners in terms of the structures and designs that you have to learn.
Does it give you nightmares, or is it okay with you?
It was okay.
We heard some horror O-Chem stories, and I joke. I mean, it was just, it's a lot of work, but obviously there's a lot of reward as well that goes with it. Carol in Naples also wants to weigh in on, Carol, you said you were discouraged from going into art?
Well, not going into it, but I was a political science major, minor in English and history, and I was getting my teaching certificate on the side, and one of the courses I could take was art in school or something, teaching art. And so our first assignment was to go home and draw something mechanical. I'd always thought I was very bad at drawing, always wished I was good at it. Took the little electric fan on my desk and thought, you know, I'll make a mess of this, and drew this very accurate, great, I couldn't believe it. Took it in for the homework assignment. He picked three of us that had done something, and he highlighted, these are the three best ones, and mine was one of them. And I was like, wow. And he said, these all show that you're not artistic. This is mechanical, and you're intelligent, and you're able to put it on paper, but it shows you are not artistic. And that just really was not a good thing to say to somebody who had, he obviously pointed out, had done a good job, and maybe if I'm good mechanically, you know, someone could help me be good artistically with the mechanical skill. So I just never pursued it and didn't have much interest in the rest of the class.
And how do you feel now about that?
Well, that's just what I said. It's very, it was very wrong for the teacher to say that. Yeah. I mean, he could have said these are very mechanical and have pointed out if with this basic skill, you know, you've got a lot and you could, these people can pursue a more artistic bent. Now I'll show you some with a more artistic bent and, you know, let's combine the two or whatever. But he just said these, you know, I'm so happy I was able to do it myself. I couldn't believe it looked so great myself. And then when he pointed out it's one of the three best and said, this shows you have no artistic talent, you know, that's not encouraging. And it's just, I was a teacher. Any student should never be discouraged like that about anything. There's always something good there, and you may not encourage them to, you know, become an artist as your occupation, but you just build on what they have.
Well said, Carol. Thank you for the phone call. And what do you think, the art teacher in the room? Go ahead.
I mean, I think there's a general perception out there that talent with art, they go together, and the people that are talented have it and can create it, and then the rest just don't. But I really feel like that's completely wrong. I mean, you can learn it just like any of the STEM curriculums. You know, you can learn that. You can learn anything if you put your mind to it. And so this growth mindset, I think, is something that, you know, to keep considering. And I'm very, very sad that her teacher did that to her, because anybody can create a technical drawing, but sometimes, you know, they can do a lot more, too, if they push themselves.
I get a long email from a listener named Adam who thinks that talking about combining STEM with art is a waste of time, that we are in the everyone gets a trophy generation where you have to be good at everything, and we can't be honest with kids about what their future should and shouldn't be. That's essentially the sum and total of Adam's email. And I don't think that that's, Adam, I respect your point of view. I don't think that's what the message is from Dr. Maccaibo or Katie Malley or Laura Arnold or Ben McLaughlin on this panel today. I don't think the message is that every student is great at everything and tell them that they're great at everything. I think it's that there's nothing wrong with recognizing your career path may be one way, but that doesn't mean that other aspects that will not be your career or other educational components should be kind of marginalized or laughed at or not at least appreciated for the possible value they bring. I mean, Ben, I think you've made a good point here. You happen to be one of those less common types who's just good at everything, I guess. But you're seeing the value of the way these things cross over, even if I don't know what your career is going to be. Do you have an idea of what your career is going to be?
I'm thinking of possibly advertising for national park conservation efforts.
Wow. That's of cool. All the different things, that is not what I expected. Okay. but you can see how the various parts that will not be your career can still help you. And so I guess that my point to Adam is that I don't think we're trying to tell everybody you're all good, equally good at everything. That wasn't the message. Do you take it that way, Ben?
I did not take it that way at all.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead, Laura.
Yeah. I think I'm not a fortune teller, so I don't know what my students' career paths will be. And they might have an idea of what their career path might be, but I think even, you know, millennials and people in the older generations have changed careers often as well. So we really don't know what these futures are going to be or what skills will be useful to our students. So I don't want to pigeonhole a student into just being a science student or not being a science student, because all of the skills that they would get from all of their classes could be applicable in their future career. Like, you listed a career that I didn't even consider, like, was a career. And we're preparing students for careers that probably don't exist yet. That's how I look at my job. And so I need to prepare them with as many diverse skills as possible, even though I am a science teacher.
Well, a very wise text from a listener named Paul says that Da Vinci is the proof that science and art go together. I mean, you talk about a perfect classical example of how those things can interweave, and yeah, that is the obvious one that sort of negates any argument that they don't go together. Dr. Makaibo, you're looking at that thing kind of with a thumbs up.
Absolutely,
yes.
I mean, that's just a stellar example of what, you know, how art and STEM can work together. And
John's telling you to get closer to that microphone. That's all.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
That it's an excellent example. It's not just 1 + 1 = 2. It's much more than that.
Absolutely. And then the other side of the, you know, sort of extending on Adam, the emailer's argument that this is not a good idea, Lloyd Benson IV is a researcher with the National Center for Policy Analysis. And Benson says that we're still trailing the world in STEM in many ways, and that STEM still needs to be the focus. And he says the general addition of an arts component distracts from the focus on the hard sciences. Benson says STEM suffers from a major problem with student engagement, and focusing on changing STEM to STEAM distracts from that issue. Dr. Makaibo?
I think it's actually the quite opposite. I think having the art component would help the students engage the topic and help them be more innovative and creative. Art, to me, is a tool. It's not an additional subject, but it's a tool for the students to use STEM to their own advantage. So I think having art component into the STEM education is a positive.
Do you agree with his premise that there is an issue with student engagement in general with STEM?
I think I don't have a lot of long year experience,
okay,
but in teaching, but I do think that there may be some issues.
Okay.
Yes.
But in other words, even if the premise is correct, you view art as a way to solve that, not to
distract from
it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Let me ask Laura Arnold the same question then on STEM and engagement. Is there an issue with student engagement with STEM?
I think a lot of the times students are told they're not science or math people, as we've talked about multiple times in this program. And that is a message that students hear and internalize, just like you've spoken to, Evan. So that engagement can be a problem. But I, as a science teacher, I'm pretty hopeful. I see the world becoming a little more scientific, and even Big Bang Theory has brought some engagement to science, and my students come in wanting to know about all these things on Big Bang Theory.
Go ahead, Ben, you want to weigh in? Go ahead.
Sure. I actually researched student engagement and perception research through the artistic lens with my overseeing professor, Dr. Jessica Waugh, under the Binghamton Ecology Department. And our research was creating an art exhibit based around scientific research to test whether people perceived the research differently after being exposed to artwork. And we found that people with non-scientific backgrounds were about 20.1% more interested in the research after viewing art. And this just shows that art can be used to promote the sciences, and they can work with each other. But our study is actually not really published yet. It was conducted once with a small sample size, so this might not be indicative of the entire population, but it is a significant finding, I think.
Very good. And Katie Malley, I didn't want to leave you out. Art teacher at Brighton High School. Did you want to weigh in there as well?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want people to perceive that we're thinking by putting the A in, it's the central focus of everything in STEM. There's a lot of study and focus on the other areas, as there should be. But even just incorporating some small pieces of art, like, for instance, the divergent brainstorming, you know, when scientists have problems that they're trying to solve, you know, just thinking of the first solution or just a couple of solutions might not be the best way. But if they have more practice with brainstorming lots and lots of different outcomes and, you know, really taking more risks, then they might be able to find, you know, even the better solution. So that's one of the things the arts can really help with. And then also just with the engagement piece, relating it back to their own selves and their own lives can really help students connect with the material they're learning in their classes.
I have a long list of tweets. Can't get through them all, but let me just grab a couple here. The Genesee Center for the Arts and Education sends a tweet saying, FYI, regarding STEM or STEAM, our director is a chemical engineer and currently heads an arts org. Oh. So there you go. Dr. Makaibo, a little fist pump there. And Trish writes to us and says, some creatives don't have three-dimensional talent. Some of us are two-dimensional artists. We marry 3D artists for balance. Matt writes to us, wish we'd stop thinking being inclined toward art. One must be able to draw realistically as a child. Drawing is only one art form. Do you agree with that?
I don't. I actually feel like at a certain point in most people's childhoods, they have like a scarring moment, and that kind of halts their art abilities. So, I mean, if you have been told along the way that you can't draw at a certain age, you might remember that memory or not, that can actually stunt where you are artistically. And I will say there is information about that. There have been studies done out there. I can't quote them right now, but I learned about it when I was becoming an art teacher.
So. Okay, and I think what Matt's saying is art means many different things. It just doesn't just mean, can you draw?
Oh, okay.
You agree with that?
Sure, yes, of course.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And to Matt's point there, that's how I felt growing up. My twin brother is a tremendous artist. And I didn't just compare myself to him and think, well, not going to reach that level, so do something else. But I did think, you know, I cannot draw. And I just thought, I guess that means that I probably shouldn't paint either. I should, you know, which again, I regret now. Go ahead, Laura.
Yeah, our students, so in our project, our students made sculptures. They made digital art pieces using Photoshop. A bunch of students did that. And then they did do traditional drawings as well as collage. We did kind of limit it to the visual arts, but of course you could do a performance, you could create music. We had one student create a video. So there's all sorts of different types of art, and we tried to engage our students in those in this project.
All right, and talking about all the different modes of expressing, et cetera, Aragami writes to us on Twitter, and the folks from Aragami have been on the program before. They said, putting the A in STEAM is essential for all students to not only improve their communication skills, but to give voice to students who express themselves differently. What ideas have we missed out on because we weren't speaking their language? It's a good question. So if you're just joining us, we've been talking about STEM versus STEAM. Broadly speaking, you've heard STEM many times in recent years in the news, science, technology, engineering, and math. And putting the A, turning STEM into STEAM, is adding arts to the mix there. As Katie Malley says, not making arts necessarily the center point, but to leverage creativity and perspectives, and not just to separate STEM from artistic endeavor. And Dr. Hitomi Makaibo is here. She's an assistant professor of chemical engineering at the University of Rochester. For our listeners who've missed the partnership that sparked this discussion, tell us what you want to do going forward now. We've got Brighton teachers here, got a Brighton grad, you're here. What do you want to do going forward with this?
Hey, so I have a small few steps and a very large vision.
Sure.
Starting with this very big vision that I have, what I really want to do is actually even have the projects that the high school students have made be exhibited into places like airports or museums. And so not just make it the students' experience, but for passerbys to actually just see, hey, what's this project? What's it about? And then get them also connected to this leading edge research that in a very broad sense. So they might not be interested in STEM at all, but this kind of just walking by and just seeing it, I think, would also be a way to connect these people to the STEM area. And a more smaller jump, I would like to continue this project together. I'd actually like to also have them use our research groups studies as a topic for the students to come up with an artistic presentation, and then maybe I can actually get them a little more exposed to the university's atmosphere in the STEM area. Maybe we can have them come over to our research university or see your lab or interact with the graduate students. I think it'll be a great opportunity for grad students as well to communicate with high school students. They cannot rely on technical jargons. They have to understand how the art is being presented. They have to be able to understand the topic better, I think it'll also be a great experience for the grad student, not also for the high school student. So I'm thinking more of an interactive way to get everybody involved. And another ambition is I'd also like to have people who is hard of hearing to also get involved, because art, you don't really have to, unless it's a video or an audio type of art. I think this is also a way to get people engaged together, kind of in a less boundary-less way, in a very young age, to get exposed to these different communities and learn about each other using STEM as a way to get connected. So that is kind of my ambition.
That's it?
It's going to take us many years.
Let me grab Thomas in Rochester, who's on the line. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hi, Thomas Warfield. I seem to be calling in all the time.
No problem.
But anyway, I was calling because I'm a professor at NTID at RIT, and a few years back, I created a project called Astro Dance, which is combining dance and astrophysics. It was funded eventually by the Science Foundation, National Science Foundation, and we toured this project up and down the East Coast. Primarily, it was focused on deaf and hard of hearing students, but then we broadened it, you know, to the general public. And one of the really interesting things I think that I found was, you know, in some ways we were using dance to, in a sense, teach science. And people did come away learning a little bit of science. We took surveys of all the audiences that we performed to. But what was interesting in those surveys to me was it was not only that people were learning a little basics about astrophysics, but they actually expanded their perception about dance. And so dance was, in a sense, teaching science, but it was also teaching about dance. And I think sometimes when we connect the arts to the academics, we kind of think of it as a, you know, way to learn math or a way to learn history, but actually it's also a way to learn about art and the appreciation and the value that art has in our lives. And so I think it's really great that we're starting to talk about STEAM as only opposed to STEM. So anyway, that's what I wanted to mention.
Well, Thomas, thank you. And you can call anytime, my friend. That's no problem. Thank you for taking the time to call.
Offline.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas. In fact, Thomas is one of now many. I've got more emails than I could read of telling stories just like what he just told, kind of combining these fields and, you know, leveraging these interdisciplines. You know, I got a nice, beautiful long note from a listener named Amanda who says, I'm loving this discussion. Just finished a PhD in chemistry at the University of Rochester. And goes on to say, she wants to point out that the Maker Faire, we have a mini Maker Faire in Rochester that takes place in November, is basically a STEAM festival and is a wonderful combination of art and science that can inspire kids to think across subject lines. That's from Amanda. It's great stuff. So, but on Thomas's point, I keep thinking that eventually this conversation is going to be out of date. And what I mean by that, Laura Arnold, is that eventually when we talk about STEAM, not that STEAM will be the rule of the day in teaching, but I think it will not be so uncommon for science teachers or physics teachers to employ art or creativity or these cross disciplines to reach kids, to kind of get them to think in different ways. Right now, it's a neat idea, and it's somewhat unusual, but I think that we're probably heading in a direction where that's more common. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree that teachers in almost every discipline are kind of breaking down the boundaries. You're no longer just a science teacher. Nobody's brought up Common Core yet, but the Common Core standards have science teachers also teaching research skills and writing skills and presentation skills. So the boundaries that we put on classes say, okay, I'm going to go to math class, I'm going to go to history class, are artificial. Our lives are interdisciplinary, and making those connections and learning more about student interest will help them see the connections themselves between every class.
Agree. Katie O'Malley, what do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I feel like in our high school where we work, I could think of many, many different examples of teachers that are already doing this in small ways on their own. I think the one piece that I hope to see more of is the opportunity for collaboration that you know, we had to do a lot of this outside of school and, you know, really, really push. I actually had to get substitutes for my classes in order to go into Laura's classes and teach. And I hope that there will be more opportunities for collaboration so that more people can take advantage of these wonderful chances that we've had.
Okay. What do you think about the future of education in these combination of fields? I mean, look, Hitomi, we got a whole hour, and the community is buzzing about this. The feedback is off the charts on this. People are really, really engaged, which means they see this as a necessary conversation to kind of push forward. But again, I think we're heading in a direction where this is not going to be uncommon.
I totally agree, and I really I am hopeful that it will be. I wish that it will be. That it's going to be a very common thing to say STEAM instead of STEM. But I do also understand there's a lot of barriers to make that happen. It's because it's not common right now. How do you actually, for like university level, I think STEAM is also a very important discipline, but us professors are not taught in a STEAM way. So we don't know how to teach STEAM.
That is very interesting.
So we have to learn how to teach STEAM effectively to students so that it's going to be a benefit for them, not just something that's totally segregated. So I think it's a very hard learning curve for everybody, and everybody has to be on board to make this a reality.
What an interesting point, because I mean, I've had conversations with great minds like Peter Oglinsky and others where we talk about how some of the great scientific minds are just not very good communicators. And when you find a great communicator in science, and Adam Frank, I mean, that's the obvious example, but there are more, it is absolutely the most fun I can have as an interviewer, because they have a grasp on scientific concepts that are far beyond what I can grasp, but they can communicate in a way that makes me excited, that makes me understand it, and I love that. So just a great point from Hitomi. I'll read a couple of emails to wrap the hour here. Kathy says, I would encourage more arts in combination with STEM curriculum. And she says, ever play with Legos? She's talking about architecture, graphic design, food, beauty, chemists. Everything seems to cross over. And Kathy says, love the discussion. Don't often get a chance to listen to the show. That's okay, Kathy. We can work on that. Hopefully you'll listen some more. That's great. Thank you very much for that. Another great email from Adam saying, I'd just like to echo the points of your guests and those commenting. An interdisciplinary education yields a robust thinker. Exactly what Laura was just saying. Thanks to everyone on this panel for giving us so much to think about and talk about as we head for the weekend. Dr. Makaibo, thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the success of this project already with Katie Malley and Laura Arnold from Brighton High School. Thank you to you both.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
And Ben McLaughlin, a Brighton High graduate and a sophomore at SUNY Binghamton. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you.
John Andrus, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful weekend. We'll talk with you on Monday.